Thrive, Voices of Androscoggin, hosted by Shanna Cox, President and CEO of the LA Metro Chamber, and me, your producer, Mark Turcotte. This bi-monthly podcast features in-depth conversations with the people shaping Androscoggin County. Each episode dives into personal stories, showcasing the leaders and entrepreneurs behind the region's economic and community vitality. Together, we explore how they build, lead, and thrive while contributing to a better quality of life for all.
Welcome. Welcome back to Build, Lead, Thrive, Voices of the Androscoggin. It's our second episode today. I'm joined here with Mr. Mark Turcotte.
Hello.
Our producer, co-interviewer, thought partner in crime.
Thought partner.
Yeah.
That's a new one.
Wow. You're always in my mind.
I like it.
I love bouncing ideas off you.
That's going to be my new license plate.
This birthed from an idea that we've had for...
That we've attempted before.
There was a pandemic.
There was.
We were doing a really good job for like a week.
We had a streak of one episode in a row.
I thought that was incredible. That's a really good record. We didn't take any off.
It was pretty good. We were batting 1,000.
That's what I'm saying. So it took 4 years for us to reorganize.
That's right.
Then, get ourselves together. And it's our second episode. And I won't do this all the time, but I brought somebody from the inside in today. And I'm really excited about sharing her with everybody. So let me start by introducing, giving you a little bit of background. So I'm joined by Sam Harriet.
Hello.
Hello and welcome. Sam, you're going to learn a bit about Sam today. So Sam's new to our team here at the Chamber. And I don't know if that's enough to get a podcast episode every time, but Sam's got some extra fun stuff that I think in our efforts with this podcast to help folks think about some of the day-to-day things that they're encountering, whether it's them managing their business, whether it's them supporting their staff or showing up to work, how some of what we see in our day-to-day and here at the local level really are connected to these bigger concepts and bigger pictures. And Sam's just such a great story that I think hits on all of those different pieces. And so let me tell you a little bit more about Sam before we get Sam to tell us about herself. So Sam was born and raised in London, England. You're going to pick up on that pretty quick, listeners. She was growing up there, loving the culture, the diversity, the food, and the arts of a very big city, I would go so far as to say. She spent her teens and the majority of her early 20s living in different countries, France, Russia, Bahrain. She visited Maine for the first time in only 2018. And that's where she started to fall in love with not only the state of Maine, but as it turns out, one particular Mainer. After a 5-year long distance relationship, which is insane, with her now wife, she finally made the move to Maine in May of last year. They chose Lewiston and Auburn as the cities to make their home and now live here with their two cats. You could have gone anywhere. You chose LA. Yeah. Just in a sentence or less, was it a dart? Was there a particular Google search filter you put? How did you end up in LA?
No, I mean, my first thought was go to Portland. I'm from London. I'm moving to Maine, which the whole state seems rural to me.
Yeah.
And then I thought, no, let's look at what else there is in Maine. Don't just gravitate towards the biggest city or the one that I might have heard of. And there were a lot of things that went into it, but ultimately it's the one that felt most like home.
Mm.
Like it reminded me of London in some ways. There's a lot of diversity here. There's arts here. So one thing I did Google filter was, is there a theater?
Nice.
There are several, which it played into it. But just coming through it, I just felt right.
I have to say, so I oftentimes tell people that I wasn't fortunate enough to be born here. I come from down east Maine, which is sometimes the center in our Maine culture, Sam, as you're probably getting to know.
Yeah.
There's this whole line of like, you're from here or you're from away. I think that language is... I think it's maybe well-intentioned, but I also think that it's damaging. That's my personal opinion. My father's from Bar Harbor, and I think that sometimes that's the epicenter. Like for people who are local to MDI or who live in Bar Harbor, being from here means something really important to them. And it's because they're like 1/18th of the population for half of the year. And so I can see why it would matter about having access to your favorite parking spot or
Absolutely.
Being able to get your coffee in the morning, right? Like there's some of that that's there. But as we become a state that needs more people to work, that needs people to move here, whether they're from New Hampshire or whether they're from New Zealand, we need more people here. And so the ways in which we recognize the difference of where we were born as something that adds to how we understand each other and how it makes our lives better instead of as a definer or a restrictor of how you don't belong, I think it's really important. And so I often say I'm not fortunate enough to have been born in LA, but of the places I've lived, it was the first that felt like home to me too. And so that really means a lot to me. Before we move into all the fun stuff, Sam has felt like she's had many different careers. All of them seem to center around one thing, which is connecting people. And as our director of engagement, we latched onto that pretty quickly. Her first jobs were teaching dance and theater, which then expanded into teaching English as a second language as she undertook a degree in languages. We are going to get into that later. Since then, she's worked as a project manager for many different industries, but her most impactful was joining the team setting up the COVID-19 testing response for the British government. She is now very excited. She says, I'm not just saying this, she declares her own excitement. She is very excited about taking on the role here as the director of engagement at the chamber and can't wait to get involved with the community and meet as many new people as she can. Thank goodness, because as a chamber, we have 700 members and 3,300 representatives. So we're going to keep you busy.
Yeah.
You're going to meet so many people. So that's just a little bit of your background. And our first segment, we're going to develop a song for her, because singing is, as we've noticed, maybe not my forte.
I enjoyed it.
How about you introduce this and I won't sing it?
We need to bring a ukulele.
We need a ukulele segment. I think that's right.
Our first segment is Getting to Know You, a relaxed, engaging segment where we ask guests fun, personality-revealing questions to help listeners learn about and connect with our guests on a personal level.
One or two sentence answers.
Okay.
Don't want to delve too deep. Just scratching the surface before we get underway. What is a book, show, or movie that has inspired you recently?
Can I choose a podcast?
Yes.
Seeing as we're podcasting.
I think that's actually very appropriate.
I'm a big podcast listener, so that is more appropriate to
me.
I think my favorite one that's always inspired me, and I don't have any idea if it's famous here or not, so maybe no one will have heard of it, or maybe
I'm
bringing it to America.
Yeah.
It's called The Guilty Feminist, and it's by a woman called Deborah Frances White, and it is delving into all sorts of topics, but from a feminist lens, and also how we don't have to be perfect to be a feminist, or delve into anti-racism, or any of those intersectional topics that they talk about there, that you can say, I'm a feminist, but I have 75 pairs of shoes at home.
Yeah. Sometimes it's really funny that you bring that up. I've often thought of myself as a very bad feminist, like a not good enough feminist. And it's not lost on me that I'm a woman in power, that I'm a woman leader. I take my role as gatekeeper very seriously. Where can I use my power or my privilege to pave ways for other women, whether it's in business, it's through the work of the chamber or mentoring. But I was really slow to really understand the way in which gender played a role in my day-to-day work life, in my career trajectory. And so I'm going to have to check that out, because that resonates. Yeah. I'm not a 75 shoe kind of girl. That part didn't resonate. I've got like nude and black and in two different heights, and I call it a day.
Yeah, I'm the same actually, but it's one of those examples that they use on it quite a lot.
It's a really good. How many high heels do you have, Mark?
I'd rather not say.
Yeah, okay, that's
we're
fair
on
enough.
Record.
Okay.
So
we'll circle back to your shoe obsession later.
Thank
that's
you.
Fair. So you've been here a year and 4 months, if my math is like roughly. So enough time to be able to answer this question with some level of confidence. What's your favorite way to spend a weekend in Androscoggin County?
Ooh, there are so many ways. One of my favorite things about moving to Maine in particular is the nature. We have some green spaces, but it's a big city. And even when you go outside of London and into kind of the countryside of like the south of England, so much is like privatized. The like public access is really hard. And the access to water here is so good. I love to swim. So,
are you ocean or lake?
I didn't know I was lake until I moved here.
Yeah, lakes.
I am
great.
Now lake, because I was a couple of hours with. I mean, the UK is an island, so we have ocean to get to. I mean, it's cold, but you can get to it.
Ours is too.
Yeah.
You might have noticed.
I have noticed, but I love the lake. So I like Rang Pond because that's the closest to me. I got my park pass within like 2 weeks of being here, and I go probably 4 times a week.
Yeah.
If I can get it in after work.
Bonus points for knowing that it's Rang Pond.
Yes.
So if you read it,
looks like
when
range.
I was new,
that's what I called
yeah,
it.
Yeah. How
time.
Do I get to Range Pond? And I mean, that's the first marker of like, oh, this lady isn't from around here. Mm-hmm. It's so true. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
Nailed that.
Yeah. Well, I luckily have a Mainer at home to correct all my pronunciation. And she does.
How fortunate are you for yeah. that constant ability to learn, shall
yeah.
we say?
So going and swimming, sitting on the beach, I absolutely love that. And then the other thing I love that is I've understood to be American as a whole rather than just Maine is going out for ice cream.
Yeah.
We did not have ice cream shops like that what? Just on every corner or hanging
what
around
do you, what
in
do you
England.
Do?
You don't go out for ice cream.
That's such a
you
shame.
You can have ice cream at home. We have ice cream vans in the summer that might like go towards a beach or near a school.
Twinkle through the neighborhood.
Yeah. But the ice cream, just the let's go out for ice cream after dinner or before dinner or instead of dinner.
Or at breakfast.
Yeah, or whatever you want.
There's no judgment.
Yeah, I love it. There's so many times where we look at each other and think, should we just have ice cream for dinner? I love it.
So that's something I probably take for granted. I live a block from a Dairy Joy, which is one of our two like locally owned kind of locally famous ice cream yeah. spots. There's many in this area, and the fact that I can just jiff over there and that it is a thing that we do,
it's great.
I don't think I was realizing that I took that for granted. I will stop taking that for granted. Can't imagine a life where you didn't have that on the list of like, should we get coffee, drink, or an ice cream? Like, it's just, that's fantastic. I'm going to help you answer this one if you don't hit what I'm hoping you share.
Okay.
Only 3 days, I've already learned some very cool things about Sam. What's a surprising skill or talent or two that you have outside of work?
I think the one that you're going to want me to talk about is theater, dance, singing, question mark?
Yes, and your yes. language skills.
And languages, I guess, yeah. So I love theater, dance, singing, and I've been able to be involved in it in this community. It was one of the first things I did. Was find that theater on Google Maps and see what they were doing next and go immediately there and able to be cast in shows, to choreograph shows. I absolutely love doing that.
You've already choreographed a show since we
I
here.
Have choreographed two and been in one.
So give some voice to them. Which one?
So I was originally, the first one I was in was CLT's The Little Mermaid
yeah.
last summer. I played one of the eels of Flotsam and Jetsam.
Oh, fun.
I was Flotsam, which was a lot of fun. And then once you're in the theatre community, I find wherever you go, you find the theatre people or the artistic people. And they're like, great, you're in. Let's yeah. go. Someone called me and said, we're doing Elf Junior for the musical in Monmouth. And I choreographed that one for kids who are kind of age 8 to 14, which was so much fun.
So I'm a parent, and I can't imagine trying to get a group of kids to do dance moves.
It's not easy.
Like, that's an impressive, that's a whole nother level of skill.
It's not easy.
It's impressive.
These kids in particular were great. They yeah. wanted to be there. They right. were so excited. It was Christmas. They were jacked up on sugar. They had all the energy. It was great.
So that's what I'm doing wrong as a parent. They don't want to be there to do the things I'm asking them to. Okay. I'm gonna work on that. That's my takeaway from today's yeah. episode. Thanks. Languages. So, I mean, yeah. we tease that you are somebody who studied languages, who have taught some language. Tell people what languages you speak.
So I will confidently say I speak French. Mm-hmm. I lived in France for 2 years. I worked for a French company for a while. I had a French teacher who just really inspired it in me and connected me with someone when I was 16 to say, why don't you go nanny for this family for the summer? And I went to the south of France, age 16, and looked after 3 kids who I didn't know what they were saying and they didn't know what I was saying, but we figured it out. And I think that moment I realized I love languages because
yeah.
you can go into a space and have absolutely no idea what the other person is saying and think, okay, we're from two different worlds. We do not understand each other. And so quickly, without even words yet, you start to understand each
yeah.
other, start to find what you have in common, start to find ways that you can communicate in common, because all humans, even if we have incredibly different languages,
mm-hmm.
have some similar ways that
yeah.
we get things across. And then the language comes. And I think it's such a great way to really understand other people and other cultures. So yeah, French is the one I say I confidently can speak. I do speak Russian a little bit. It has been a long time since I've used it. I did live there for a little while, but I haven't used it really in a good 8-9 years because
it's a rusty Russian.
It's rusty Russian. It's rusty Russian. But I would love to learn more languages and call myself fluent in them. It's just finding the time to sit down. Yeah.
Well, so we have a huge French community here.
Yeah.
I took French. My teacher was not as inspiring as you. She was wonderful, but I didn't take to it quite the way you did. Mm-hmm. I learned how to say, Zut, ça va mal étudiant, which is pretty much you're a bad student in French.
Yep.
I learned that one really well. I heard it a lot. But so we were taught Parisian French.
Yep.
And where I grew up, there were not a lot of French speakers. And so like that was the French. And the people who you spoke French with spoke French taught in a school. In the Parisian style, which is probably closer to
what I learned.
That makes sense because you were, you know, near Paris and France. So here we speak, I think, what my teacher referred to as French fried French and English, which is this like Franco French, which really is Quebecois, right? Like it's a very different, to the extent that it sounds a little bit different for me with my very bad student ears in the world of French. And so I'm curious, how is it like learning another dialect? Have you been around any of our French speakers? Because there's lots of opportunity here.
Yeah, I have. I think Quebecois is very different from French, from France. I can understand roughly what's going on. It's not the accent that throws me off, but it's like the vocabulary is
unique.
It is unique.
Yeah,
it's completely different. And so I have been able to spend a bit of time at the Franco Center.
Good. Did you go to a little rencontre yet?
I haven't been to them yet because they're on a weekday morning and I work, which is the problem. So I need to find
I know
time.
Your boss. I bet we could call that member outreach and that you could find a way to go
Perfect.
Do some immersion. I think that would be fantastic.
Perfect. So yeah, I would love to do that, but I have been to a couple of their like other events that have had French speaking at it. There was a fundraiser for Congolese population.
Yeah.
And so I went to that. And that's the other side of the French that I think
that's what I was wondering is like,
the
and how
French
different
across
is
across Africa? I find it slightly easier to engage with and understand. That might just be from my friends that I had in France, who some of them were from like French speaking African countries.
Yeah.
Was I didn't have many friends in France from Quebec or like French speaking Canada. So I find it slightly easier to understand, but that was so much fun to go to that event and speak to lots of different people in French and different dialects of French and wake my language's brain up again because I haven't got to use it in a while.
Well, so knowing that, the next time you go, the first time you go to La Reconcha, bring a pocket full of quarters.
Oh.
They charge you when you say words in English.
Okay, good to know.
It's like part of how they make sure
that.
Yep. I've got $2 worth of quarters to get you through your first one.
Oh,
anything else is on you.
That's so funny because when I was teaching English as a foreign language in France, I did it. It was like a little mini theater school. So it was teenagers mostly who were wanting to learn. We did theater, we did dance, we did songs, but the rule was they couldn't speak French inside the room. They had to speak English. And so to start off with, you had like 12, 16-year-old girls who normally don't shut up
could
just go silent. But they eventually got there, and I was really strict with it, and that's the best way. You just have to figure out how to say it.
Yeah.
It might be wrong,
but
you're going to say it in that language instead of defaulting back.
It is also why I'm very good with Je suis désolée, madame. I'm so sorry. I'm just so, like if you said it in French, we wouldn't get
fine.
In trouble. Yeah, so
and
je ne sais pas, je suis désolée. Those are the two. Very bad accent. I'm rusty too, but
yeah,
I'm so sorry. Would get me in a lot of trouble if I said it in French.
I'm curious, Sam, if your process for learning a new language is the same as teaching.
Oh, that's a great question.
Ooh. I think for me, it has been a little bit. So I found I sat in hours and hours of lessons in all the languages that I've learned, and you can sit down and recite your grammar and learn vocabulary, and then I would get into the real world and just have a block, and I couldn't say anything. And I realized that's because you can't learn it on your own and in your own brain, no matter how much you manage to absorb there. And you do have to do a bit of that. You have to do a bit of the boring stuff of remembering grammar and learning rules. But I think you have to just get out there and speak with other people speaking that language. And so when I was teaching it, I wanted to make sure that we weren't just sitting down and learning the theory, which is why I did it with theater, with dance, these students already loved theater and dance and singing. So let's just do that in another language. And your confidence grows, your ability to say things grows. And then all that theoretical language suddenly
starts to find its way into your,
and it starts to get in. So I found that any language I've approached until I've been there, not necessarily to that country, but absorbed in that world of speaking that language, it doesn't click until you get to that moment.
It's so, I love that question, and I love hearing your answer. There's, I mean, in the 15, 18 years that I've been living and working here, and in the 5 years that I've been here at the Chamber, I've had a lot of opportunities for us to have either like community hours or full-on internships with African French-speaking people. Mm-hmm. And first of all, they're always so much better at speaking English than the amount of apologies they offer for not being able to speak English.
Cool.
So there's a lot of like, no, you're doing great. Oh, I understand. You're doing wonderful. So many times, very consistently, different people at different times, different ages, genders, areas of study previously or expertise, all almost say word for word, like, I have to practice. I have to just try, and I'm sorry if I fumble, but I'm just going to, like, the most important thing about being here is hearing and saying things in English. That always made sense to me on some level, but it makes sense to hear you talk about, like, literally the way the process of it makes sense. It's always been a really wonderful thing to be a part of and to honor about someone else's learning. And some of the language that we use on any given day, as Sam now knows, we could be talking about breakfast menu items or name badges to job reports and economic trends and language that's kind of steeped in some of those areas. And so we offer people a great opportunity.
Yeah.
You've already mastered English. So I don't know if you're going to learn quite as much as some others would. You've already mastered it.
Yeah, I get that. It's like it's building that brain muscle in the same way for a sport you would build the physical muscle, building the one in the brain.
Yeah.
And then it starts to remember how to do it by itself. You don't have to think so much.
That makes a ton of sense. Okay, my last getting to know you, and this one I'm excited to learn. What is your go-to productivity hack when you're feeling overwhelmed?
I think for me is, this is going to sound strange, but it's colors. I'm a very visual person. And so if things are not making sense, I just start color coding.
Yeah.
It really helps me. Like my calendar will always be color coded. My emails are always color coded because it helps me spot things quickly, and it just helps my brain when I'm trying.
I can verify that she was updating the colors on her calendar within 6 hours of being here on her first day. I was like, oh, look at you. You've introduced yellow. Doing great. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's a good organizing skill.
It just helps me when everything looks like there's a lot there. Then my brain suddenly goes, oh, there's not that much because I'll just look at one color. And now I can see it a lot more clearly.
It's so interesting because I think, as you've described yourself, you really are steeped in the creative community. And I would say that creatives, folks who I find spend significant time either in work or hobby or both in these creative endeavors, tend to, like as a people manager, I see these patterns that they do tend to go towards colors or pictures or very visual cues of making. So my version of that, I would argue less creative, or at least in like traditional creative spaces. I like to think I'm innovative, but I don't know that I would categorize that as creative. Like I don't create art very much. It's an area of practice for me. I do watercolor to try to stretch that side of my brain and my own skill set. And I'm pretty type A and intentional about doing that because it's not natural for me. I'm a list person. So like in the same way that you jump into your calendar or your inbox and color code, I get in there and like create hierarchies, lists, numbers for me, like visual. My brain kind of explodes when we like organize the drive with the photos, and my brain literally defaults, kind of like stutters for a minute before I can pick it up. And so it's always interesting to me how other people's brains work and how understanding it, I think, helps us become better as a team and working together and leveraging each other's differences and strengths. Cause it's so, Katie is also a color person. Becca is also a color person on our team. And so that's fun. Also, that's a great way to like step away from your work and also focus on your work. Like that's what I do with watercolor. I never thought about applying that to my work.
Yeah.
Maybe it's try that.
Because I think I'm pretty type A as well. I'm like the organized
project. You're super organized. Love that.
I just have that overlay, I think, that helps it.
Yeah. No, I think it's fantastic. All right, so now that we know you just a smidge more, let's go a little bit deeper. So one of the things that I want to focus our first part of our conversation on, as we interviewed you for this position, and we had great candidates for this position, but there was a moment, and I can clear as day remember in our conversation together when I was immediately like, Sam's our next director of engagement, 100%. It was when we were talking at the heart of it, you know, in a very traditional chamber format, the director of engagement or the person responsible for membership. In many chambers, many of our peer chambers nationally and across the state, it's a sales position. And the challenge for us in hiring and finding great candidates is somebody who understands the nature to the extent that it's very real and tangible, that there's a portion of this work that you're doing, that you'll be doing, that is sales, right? Like, we want to add new members, we want to keep our existing members. And getting folks who aren't uncomfortable with that is something that we try to be upfront about. But we are also not in any way, shape, or form, in my mind, traditional salespeople, right? Like, I don't think of what we do as sales in the day-to-day, but you can't not talk about it up front. And so we asked you a question around, you know, what does sales mean to you? What does this make sense? And her answer was the best non-answer ever, which was like, well, I don't really do that. But I think about it as building networks. Yeah. And the minute you use that language, so I've done a lot of network theory, social network theory, complex social problem solving through networks, both formal learning and then formal and informal practice over the years. And the minute you said that, I was like, aha, that's how I've been trying to find a way to articulate what it is that we do, how we think about our membership. And so tell us a bit about your experience building and leveraging networks that are relationship-based.
Of course. So it's funny you mentioned that interview question because...
Do you remember that moment?
I do. Right. Because I was really intentional about my answer on that question because I didn't want to fall into a traditional sales role. And I wanted to check that this wasn't it.
Yeah.
And I thought, if I answer it in this way and is a traditional sales role, they're not going to hire me. And then that was
the right
decision.
And that's better for everybody, right.
So... Yeah, I think for me, building those networks, I think the world is a lot smaller of a place than we think it is. Yeah. I have been to a lot of places and met a lot of different people, and I've always managed to find some connection with somebody, something in common. And when looking at like the chamber world, doing the non-sales sales, it's about kind of meeting different people and then keeping that huge spider web of the network that you have in your head. And when you introduce yourself to someone new and they mention something, going, have those neurons fire across the spider web and realize that there's someone else over here that you met 2 months ago who, if you could connect them, something amazing might happen. That's kind of how the visualization coming back, but literally visualize it in my head like that web. And that's how I hope to approach this. Mm. And I think looking back how I've done that in previous places, without answering this like an interview question.
Yeah, because it's not. You got the job. Yeah. You're here. You're great.
when I was working on COVID response, it was kind of 2020. And what are we going to do? How are we going to get COVID tests to people? And this might be a slightly different way of doing it than the US because it's very government infrastructure in the UK. So the government was, let's set up how we're going to do tests. But we also couldn't go outside of our homes or see each other in person. So we had to very quickly build the right network of people who were going to make this
happen.
Come together and happen, but also couldn't go and see anybody. That was a really interesting challenge and challenged my way of looking at how you build networks and starting to put people together who you wouldn't normally, like the person from the local authority who normally just manages small events in their municipality with the medical professional and the central government person, so they can all figure out how they're going to do it together. Yeah. And that was the biggest learning I took from that, was how to really quickly join those dots and put people together in the right way and frame what they're doing and then let it go out into the universe and hope something good comes.
Have some faith that I think that's exactly right. I When I took this role at the Chamber and I thought about the work that I was doing, I saw it through that same lens. And that's not a traditional Chamber lens. Like within the industry of membership association, specifically within that, Chambers of Commerce, which have like 150-year-old history. We're 144 years old. It is a really different way of looking at it. And I think the thing that network theory tests and puts on its head for chambers and the traditional mental model associated is that membership associations and chambers specifically were built on exclusivity, right? Mm-hmm. You join this chamber, and by doing so, you have access to, you know, these benefits, these people, these thoughts, these resources, these events. And if you are not a member, you are excluded, right? And so literally the whole construct is built around a bubble, the antithesis of a network. When you think of your neurons firing, and I saw the opportunity, much like you, to see the way that we operate, who we engage, who we support, the work that we do, being more open and more permeable and being very much relationship-based. And the number of times, in fact, so we do an event that you'll get to experience next month called Brewing Connections. It's a new event this year. And at last month's event, as we were introducing it, I mentioned to folks, hey, as we're planning 2025, we'd love to hear how you're experiencing this event, what you like about it. Is it a hit? And we should definitely make sure it's in 2025. Should we go back to breakfast every month? Give us your thoughts. And the number of people who in the room or took time to follow up by a phone or an email afterwards to say, because of this event in this month, this person led to this connection, and because of that, we've done X, Y, Z. And there's so much of our work that happens long after we've left the room, long after the introduction has been made, long after the people have talked to each other. And if we've done it well, we won't know. Right? There isn't a problem. Yeah. They're off just succeeding, making magic happen. And I've seen that lead to new dinner and show combinations between restaurants and theater. I've seen it to lead to new product development, new employment. I mean, really incredible things that you only find out by happenstance later when you see somebody, unless you ask for the feedback, which it turns out maybe we should do that more often, because it was so enlightening to hear about it. But when you described, you know, your non-sales answer to that question, it is how I've always pictured our work. Mm-hmm. And there's so many places within our work that I think that we've endeavored to do that, that we've started to do that. I think you've seen some of that just in terms of the way we approach supporting entrepreneurs, connecting entrepreneurs to mentors or experienced businesses, thinking about different life cycles or geographies or sectors. And so the minute you said that, I was like, ha ha. Ha, ha, ha. This is right.
I'm so glad we were on the same wavelength.
It was pretty.
And now I can be here.
You left the room, and Becca, who was co-interviewing, her and I looked at each other, and she's like, you can't see me at home. Nodded wildly. And I also nodded wildly, and I was like, that's right. That's exactly how we think of it. Because we're firm believers that if you're doing good work and you're doing it well, the financial return that so many folks are kind of like laser focused on from an analytics, it comes.
Yeah.
And we've seen that. You know, we're 5 years into seeing that the truth is, when you are genuine and authentic and driven by good values, and that you believe that good things happen when you connect people, it does. And that comes back to us tenfold. And so, yeah, that was one of my favorite moments in our long-standing history, Sam, of our two months long knowing each other. So, Sam, as we mentioned, you are new to this role, also fairly new to America, so about 14 months. Tell us a bit about how you're settling in, how you're finding Lewiston Auburn, some of the things that, I mean, we've hit on ice cream being lovely and the availability, but like, how is it to settle into a new community, to find your way knowing that you're making it a home, and what's standing out to you about this being your home?
So, I mean, I was very lucky in that I landed here with sort of a pre-built community, which I've landed in other places with
none of that.
And it's a much harder climb to get to the point where you feel comfortable. But my wife had already built an awesome community here, and my in-laws are here. Like, her father was from Lewiston and knows everybody. And I'm sure once he hears this podcast, we'll send it to everybody.
Great, thanks.
So I had a preset community ready to go. Mm-hmm. But one thing I was really conscious of moving here was I didn't want to just fall into that community that was preset for me, as amazing as they were, the friends, the family, the people we knew. I wanted to go out and find and experience a bit of community on my own. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard thing to do when yeah. you don't know where to start and, yeah. and who you should talk to. And so I really threw myself into going to as many community events or things that I could. So I've talked about the theater, which is my first step into most communities I get to, but also just looking at like community events that I could find. And like, I think it was earlier this year or the end of last year, I don't remember, my timeline is not good, mm-hmm. but I went to an event by Community Plate, who do like storytelling yeah. suppers. And it was so much fun. You brought food, you shared with a lot of people, and I made some really good connections there.
Nice.
And I think one thing that you have to really think about, what I had to really think about, was letting go of inhibitions of mm-hmm. feeling like you're imposing on somebody new
yeah.
or that they might not like you or they don't want to hang out with you, because most people do want more community. Even yeah. the people that have lived here their whole lives mm-hmm. are open to more community than they already have.
Yeah.
And so just putting that aside and going, I liked that person. They were really nice to talk to. I'm going to ask for their phone number, their email, and I'm going to follow up multiple times.
Yeah.
And you have to start by like forcing the relationship yeah. almost a little bit. As weird as that sounds, because you don't really start to feel comfortable with someone until you've spent a bit of time with
yeah.
them. And so that's what I've been doing, is sort of forcing relationships until the ones that do feel natural yeah. start to feel natural. Not all of them work out perfectly, but it's meant I've managed to make a few of my own like friends and different friendship groups.
Yeah.
It's really the people in a community that makes it.
Yeah.
It was at that moment that I started to think, yeah, I'm feeling more settled here.
Aww.
I can see myself being here long term.
Yeah.
And then all the other things start to come with it. I start to know where I'm going when I'm walking or driving down the street. And
are many one-way streets.
Yeah, and know what restaurants or breweries or yeah. shops to go to. And all those things I'm still learning, and I probably will be for a long time. But all of those things will start to slot in. But the people
yeah.
is the best part.
Yeah, that's always my favorite yeah. part too. When you're thinking about where to find a community event that you want to go to, or like, what was your go-to spot? Was it Facebook? Was there community calendars? Did you pick up a certain page in a newspaper?
Yeah, I kind of did everything.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, started with just Google and Googling things that were going on. But then I like to use social media, Facebook, Instagram, and find pages or people mm-hmm. that are interesting or have something I'm interested in. And that's how I spotted Community Plate, because someone talked about it and thought, okay, I'll go. And now I'm following them. And then you see someone that they follow and you can follow that. And that's how I love to like explore that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are definitely some good like community plug for the Chamber, great events page with
Thanks.
Lots of different community events on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. LAMetrochamber.com.
Absolutely. But then also just talking to people
yeah.
and hearing what they do and what they go to and showing up and trying. I heard someone did a course at the Lewiston Adult Education. So I looked up Lewiston Adult Education and then signed up for a random one just to go and see what it was like.
That's fun.
My dad.
What did you sign up for?
Yeah, I was curious before I said what my dad did.
Living It Up line dancing, which was line dancing to like R&B and funk and hip-hop.
Feel it like we should
great.
Be doing that. I should
it
be doing
great.
That. That sounds
it's
fantastic.
It's coming up again.
Is it?
I think it starts in November.
Let's circulate that link around the office. Little team exercise. So my dad moved to Columbus, Ohio after spending most of his adult life in Southern Maine. The pandemic happened, I think, 6 or 8 months after he got there. And it took about a year to realize that the travel restrictions and not being near his grandkids and the plans of like when the kids would come out for school vacations and summer vacations wasn't going to work. And so he moved home and chose to live here. to be close to us, which it's the first time that I've had that since a very, very young age. And so my dad took an adult ed class on stand-up comedy. And that was one of his ways of finding his way into and has become a huge fan, a regular attendee to local comedy. But it's funny because he found his way through adult ed.
Yeah.
And it's just, it is small world moments. I mean, what you just described, using social media, being able to see what someone else follows in true network theory and not computer network theory,
yeah.
you know, but in social network theory, which existed long before digital social media yeah. platforms helped visualize these networks of people and connections. But what you described is network theory.
Yeah.
It's exactly what you endeavor to do, but it's for those reasons, right? For being able to help people with common interests or find new interests to be able to do or explore or try new cool things or share something they're really great at that's also mm-hmm. amazing. As you found your way here, I mean, I'd like to frame this in the form of a question. Technically, are you an immigrant?
Yes.
Right.
I mean, yes.
Yeah. And so we have so many immigrants mm-hmm. in this community. And I started living and working here like 2005, I want to say. And so in the history of this area, 2005 was about 5 years after our African, specifically Somali population, started being resettled here, and they were refugees. And so I think that in the arc of history of immigration for the Lewiston Auburn region, you know, we had Irish immigrants build our mills. We had Franco immigrants come maybe 20 years later, build the housing and work in the mills, both making really significant contributions, both having moments of challenges around culture and perception and I think dealing with really challenging moments and how people who had been here or had just been here longer, right, were receiving the new populations coming in. I would say that most people, at least at this point, which is a century later for some of those populations, reflect on our Irish immigrants and our Franco immigrants. But for the first wave of the African population that came here in 2000, though technically immigrants, I think many would self-identify more as refugees. Mm-hmm. And they came through a refugee resettlement program. As I was arriving, there had been what I would call maybe not our best moment in our community's history, and I would say a very shining moment of how our community responded to notes of racism and xenophobia and you know, really having some lines around us, them, from away, from here. And I've watched over the last 20 years now, it's 20 years next year that I've been living and working in this community, how our more recent foreign-born population, immigrants of various statuses in terms of their citizenship, have made this community home, have brought back whole stretches of Lisbon Street, making them vibrant again where storefronts used to be shuttered, have created organizations and created initiatives, created businesses. I've been really fortunate to see all of those different experiences. And I would say in the last 4 years, one of our main focus areas here at the Chamber has been specifically around workforce, supporting our folks who live here being successful and thriving in our local workforce, helping our employers connect with people and meet their workforce needs. We do that under the umbrella of Strength in LA, and the Chamber has an active role in that. And so one of the things that I'm kind of curious about, I talk with so many employers who love that a portion of their workforce is foreign born. They find that they're finding really rich partnerships, relationships build. They're getting new insights. They're getting folks who are skilled and degreed and unfortunately have degree transfer issues. And so they're getting really great labor. And so as somebody who's had to literally navigate immigration systems, move here in the most nuts and bolts, technical, logistical way, what are some things that you wish employers would know about what it is to welcome somebody who was born in a different country, both from a kind of cultural standpoint, but also from like a technical standpoint? Mm-hmm. You know, what does it look like to get settled in a community as an immigrant?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the first thing I would say is that I, whilst yes, I definitely am an immigrant, I definitely want to draw the distinction between me arriving with all the privilege I have of being a native English speaker, of being white, of I arrived actually as a permanent resident. So I've had permanent resident status like on my day one of being here. I didn't have to arrive here and go through a system to try and get that.
Yeah.
And I arrived into a family of people from Maine who could help me through every step. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of help and support and a lot of privilege just from starting versus people who have. And I came here by choice. Yeah. So I made that choice versus who people who have been resettled and refugee status and have to navigate that is a whole other difficult path.
I'm pausing you there. I don't think a lot of folks recognize that there are so many folks here who come here through a refugee process. Mm-hmm. They don't get to choose. Very rarely, I would say, do they get to choose. And in the cases they do, similar to your scenario, it's because you have a built-in family that's already established and clear technical like sponsors and folks who are bringing you here. But I remember learning that from some of my friends who are refugees, born in refugee camps. Some of them moved here at two. Some of them moved here in their 20s and not realizing that that's part of the, you get a ticket and somebody tells you this is where your home is going to be from now on. And for folks from warmer climates to me, like, oh, it's Maine. We're going to Maine. At least, I mean, I just wanted to lift that up. Cause I remember learning that. And I've talked to so many folks who I don't think know that there's that kind of distinction. And in terms of like the pathways to coming here, it's a very different pathway.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, everyone has their own circumstance of how they got here, but then I think there are some common things that everyone arriving in the US or Maine or navigating that immigration system have had to deal with and deal with when they're coming in with new employers. I know that the benefit system and the healthcare is incredibly different here than it is in other places. Yeah. And my first kind of transfer to a US contract and being in a US role here, that was a real steep learning curve for me, and I found it really difficult to navigate, and I had someone at home I could ask questions to, and the people in HR were very helpful, but they couldn't understand why I was asking that, because that's how it's always done, and it's just so different from what I'm used to. So there are all those technical things, which I think healthcare benefit system, taxes are done incredibly differently, credit and setting up bank accounts and all of those things. Like, I had to go through all of that here, and I knew a lot of it, but there is always going to be something that you don't know you need to know.
Yeah.
You don't even think I need to
look
that up.
The things you don't know you need to know are my nemesis.
Yeah.
I so much prefer the ones I know I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you can learn about
it.
But one thing that I found, and I found it maybe 5 months into living here, so I'd gone through quite a lot of these things already, but the Amjambo
Africa
newspaper, I happened to pick one up at the Franco Center and was like, oh, a newspaper in multiple languages, this will be fun, I can read in French. And
scratches that itch.
Exactly. And I started reading one of their kind of sections, which is helping people figure out what they need to do as a Mainer. There was, what do you do when it snows? You have to move your car. That literally had never occurred to me.
That's a good
and
point.
All sorts of things like that. And I read the whole thing, cover to cover, like within a day, because I was like, this is so helpful and so interesting. And I'm not the target audience of that newspaper, and I still found it so helpful. So I think that shows that's one of those community initiatives that is done for one purpose but can help so many people who are not the African population who are coming and might need to use that. Actually, the local Maine employers might pick up a copy and go, oh, these are the things that they wouldn't know to know. How can I help my employees learn that or understand that or be exposed to that?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fantastic.
Well, I couldn't agree more. We've done a little bit of work with Umjambo Africa. We've done some advertising with them relative to Strength in LA because it's such a great way to reach mm-hmm. people who are new here. But even as you listed like those areas of health benefits and taxes and bank accounts, and one of the things that I would name, and it's funny, maybe also sad, but this is the first time I'm connecting these two dots, so judge me later. But the truth is, so I'm a mom of four boys. Three of them are 19, almost 20, and two of them are in full-time careers and have been for about a year now. And all of those things are things that I realized as they've gotten their first job and then they've been there long enough to get the benefits package and they set up their direct deposit and then they're like, what is the tax season, Mom? Like mm-hmm. all those things
yeah.
about our American systems, whether you're foreign born or not, entering employment, whether you grew up here and it's your first time yeah. entering in as a career or not, there's a lot of commonality to the things that I've heard them or had to help them with. And the reality is they didn't learn that in school. That's no dig on our school system. Our school system does incredible work with a really wide array of things that they're trying to educate our kiddos on, but like basic things like how to write a letter, how to fill out a check. Like mm-hmm. those have been very intentional parental educational moment that like, okay, after you've had the meeting with the HR person and they've given the employee handbook and the big thick packet of benefits, people come home and we'll make sense of it together. Yeah. I say that because when I'm thinking about the way I kind of frame that question about like, what should employers know? I think employers should know everything you just described also applies to what happens when you are hiring youth.
Absolutely.
Because I hear so many employers talking about, you know, different generations in the workplace, what it looks like to hire a younger generation today. And they sometimes are dismayed that that younger employees don't know these things or, you know, and how do they support their employees in learning them? Like, generally speaking, folks, particularly HR folks, are like, they do God's work. They yeah. really want people to understand and to be able to like be healthy at work, to leverage their benefits, to use their 401k to save. And they sometimes find a disconnect. And so hearing you say that makes me realize that there's something there to what it just is to be new to careers here.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether it's your first time here or just your first time, I think there's some similarities in what employers could take away from that.
Definitely.
Yeah. Closing segment. The time goes so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Our closing segment is Looking Back, Leading Forward, a reflective closing where we invite our guests to share advice or insights they would give to their younger self or to those with big ambitions in business or community leadership.
So, Sam, if you could offer advice to your younger self, what would it be?
This is probably contradictory to everything I still do and have always done, but don't worry so much about the plan.
Yeah.
I have planned so much in my life that I've detailed. I'll be here at this age and I'll move there and I'll have this job and this type of place mm-hmm. I'll be living and this is the success I'll have and what I'll have achieved. The actual thing that has happened, my life has been so much better than I could have ever planned
yeah.
for. I'd never even heard of Maine, and now I live here and I love it. So you can't plan for everything. So don't worry about it too much
yeah.
and let yourself go on the journey
yeah.
and see where you end up.
What follow-up question? What would you tell your younger self that would make them take that advice? That's the challenge, right?
It's
like
hard.
That's the challenge.
It's hard. I don't know if there's anything you
right.
can say to make someone take
no.
that advice. I think life does that for you.
Yeah.
So I was always like the most studious mm-hmm. student. I wanted to get the best grades and go to the best university. And then I just didn't get in anywhere. And I was 18 going, I didn't get into anywhere I applied. What am I going to do? Mm. Panic. And so I just packed a bag and moved to Paris. Very spontaneous decision for an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
But it set the course of my life in a completely different direction. And it was very hard to do. And I was so anxious and everything about it was horrible at the time. But I look back on it now and think, if life didn't throw that at me, I didn't get into university where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have had to rethink the plan. And so now, having lived a bit of life,
yeah.
when things like that get thrown at me, I try and take a breath and go, remember when that last thing
yeah.
happened and it, mm-hmm. you made it? It's not that it turned out, but you took some actions to make it better. You're going to do the same thing here and you'll figure out how to make it better. So I think life, the trials and the hard yeah. things happen in life, hopefully will teach you that.
Yeah. As a parent, I can tell you there's nothing you can mm-hmm. say to teach that. Like, it is the living and the experiencing, and that's such good advice. It's such good. It's like, do you find you say it's contradictory?
I still.
Right. It's like you have to tell yourself
plans.
That.
Yeah. I love to make a plan.
Yeah.
I still will. But now hopefully I'll take the breath and mm-hmm. not panic if the plan doesn't go
yeah.
exactly the way I hope.
Yeah. Because the advice is not. Don't plan,
mm-hmm.
right? The advice is to give yourself grace and adjust your plan and take the learning and the lessons yeah. and the journey from it. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's fantastic advice. Write that down. Let's get a tattoo. We'll get that tattooed. What is one lesson or piece of wisdom you would share with someone aiming to make an impact?
Listen. I think active listening is so important, because it's so easy to come in with big ideas and this is what we'll do and this will make a huge impact. But if you don't listen to what the world is telling you, what yeah. the community is telling you, what the person next to you is telling you, it's not necessarily going to make the impact that you thought it would. The intention doesn't yeah. always equal the impact. So that's something I try and do, is actively listen mm-hmm. and try and really hear what people are saying. And hopefully then you can make the impact that you want to make on the people that you're listening to.
Yeah, well said. I love that you're very specific about active listening. I think there's a lot of recognition that listening is important, and mm-hmm. the saying, and the folks who love to share the saying of, like, you've got two ears and one mouth.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the math on it. But I think sometimes it does get misconstrued with listening as just, like, talking less. And listening, active listening, is a very different thing.
Yeah.
I think you put that very well for folks to be able to understand, because it is two very different things. And
And it's a skill. It's a skill you have to work at.
And practice.
And practice.
Like every day, you gotta keep practicing at it. No, it's exactly right. I'm so grateful that you said yes to a podcast in your scary first day, that I was like, so let's talk about your schedule for the week, Sam. Here's what we're gonna do together on Wednesday. But it's been a joy, and I'm so glad that you could share not just a little bit more about yourself, but some of these insights, because I think there's so much that you bring that we'll be able to learn from in ways that truly benefit our larger mission and the work that we're doing. And it's always just nice to talk to someone else who has chosen to make this place home and loves it like we do.
Thank you for inviting me. I have to admit, when you invited me for the podcast, I thought you were asking me to interview someone. I didn't quite realize I was interesting enough to be the person to be interviewed. So thank you for thinking I'm interesting enough and seeing that in me.
100%. 100%.
I can sum up this episode in two words.
Do it.
Good hire.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Couldn't agree more.
Hope I can live up to that.
You're going to love it. There's going to be days you wish you didn't love it as much as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the days that you're tired. And you'll still love it.
I'm 3 days in, and I love it so much.
See? She did get cake and ice cream on her first day. Second day. It's part of our big strategy.